Health and Fitness with David Hollywood, with the all-new Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club, midlandsparkhotel.com.
Midlands 103.
On this week's programme, we celebrate 65 Roses Day by catching up with the mom of a Midlands boy with cystic fibrosis, who's gone from missing school over all of last winter to being a mascot at the Ireland-England game at the Aviva Stadium just a few days ago. You'll meet the first ever man elected to the position of President of the Camogie Association. He's a Midlands European MMA champion, and I've been talking to a Westmeath man who went from not being able to walk due to chronic back pain to being the first man to climb every hill and mountain in Wales and Ireland. Many listening this evening might remember Mullingar's Ciarán Kilmurry. He was seven at the time that we were covering his story last year. He was one of 35 children in Ireland excluded from access to Kaftrio, which has been described as a life-changing treatment for those with cystic fibrosis. It was approved for both Ciarán and the other children in need of it. I'm very glad to say that Ciarán's mom, Stephanie, joins us on Health and Fitness this evening on 65 Roses Day, the day to nationally celebrate and support those who are either living with cystic fibrosis or helping others who have it as well. Stephanie, thanks so much for taking our call this evening.
No problem, David. Thanks very much for having me.
So as I mentioned there, Ciarán did eventually get access to Kaftrio, and it is being described as being such an important and telling treatment for people with cystic fibrosis. How's Ciarán doing at the moment?
Oh, Ciarán is great. He's flying. So he got access last May too, so he's almost a year on it now. So a few major things that would have changed for Ciarán is his weight. Cystic fibrosis, an awful lot of children suffer with weight gain. So he's put on over 9 kgs since he started Kaftrio. He's moved on he used to be always on the 25% centile of the weight. He's now up to the 75th, which never was since he was born. They're nearly now thinking, we have to keep an eye on this now, and maybe don't go, which is a new worry for us completely, but one I'm happy to be having. His recent lung function test in Crumlin, he hit over 100 on that, which again, has never done in all the years. But even, it's not even that. The life-changing things, I suppose, for him is that the fear of him going places, doing things, that fear is all gone. He's now living the life of a normal 8-year-old that we always wanted him to live. He's not missing school. He missed so much school in the first few years between COVID and obviously CF-related problems. And then from an antibiotic point of view, he's been on, I think, one antibiotic in the last year, whereas previous years he would have been on like 5-6 different antibiotics throughout the year. And even the one he was on was kind of more of a preventative one rather than a required, if you know what I mean. Generally with kids with CF, if they get any sort of cough, you kind of start an antibiotic just to be sure. So it really has been a life-changing year for him.
That's fantastic. The difference that you describe as night and day, because I remember I couldn't get over just this idea that he had to miss school over the winter period last year. And I remember that the school, St. Kenny's National School, isn't it?
Yeah.
They made a wonderful video for him. So it must fill your heart with joy to know that he's able to come back into that embrace of his friends in school and the teachers on a full-time basis.
They were massively supportive because we were in Crumlin at that time. We were in Crumlin for 10 days that time when the video was made. And, it meant the world. He bawled his eyes out when he seen the video. It meant the world to him. And to be able to go back in the school have been amazing. And they really are great support, which is a huge help.
Yeah. When you're a parent and you have to ultimately step up to the plate because you don't have any other option. This is the situation you're living with, and Ciarán needs you to be strong, let's say. I imagine a lot of the time you don't feel how stressed you are or concerned you are because life doesn't afford it. Have you taken a moment in the last few months to look back on then, and have you had a kind of realization that, God, this was weighing so heavily on all of us?
Yeah, so it's just little things like, I've been able to go to birthday parties and not worrying about what you're going to pick up. This weekend especially, I think, was kind of a big, so he got chosen the time he was in Crumlin. Megan Campbell, one of the Irish soccer players, came into Crumlin and Ciarán was chose to meet her. And this week, on Tuesday, Ciarán was chose to go to the Aviva to do mascot for the Irish team, and just seeing him out on that pitch with all the other children and being able to do that sort of thing and not worry about, oh God, what's he going to pick up here, and it's cold and we shouldn't be, you know, watching him out on the pitch, absolutely exploding with excitement, and just being like one of the other kids. That, you know, that sort of moment really was just, I have to say, really. But as you say, like a lot of parents with children with special needs or, you know, different stuff, it's just part of your life, and you kind of just, it just goes along with, you know, like Kieran would take 25 tablets a day. He does nebulizers twice a day. He doesn't think anything of it. You know, whereas my 14-year-old daughter, if I ask her to swallow a tablet, there's a big drama about it.
Yeah,
she struggles
there.
But it's just amazing what people, parents do when they're required to do it. But as you say, yeah, it's kind of little, just little moments, like watching them on the pitch on Tuesday night, just to me was just, it just, my heart just exploded, I have to say.
Well, come here.
It really was a special moment.
Considering your situation, it's a special moment. But look, being the mascot for Ireland in an Ireland-England game at the Aviva Stadium is an unbelievable moment. That's so cool. And what a memory to have for the rest of his life and for you guys. Because I know the atmosphere, I was watching the game at home. It sounded brilliant.
Mm. And it was just for, Kieran's never been, because like that, he's been wrapped in cotton wool for the first probably 7 years of his life. The other two would have been in Croke Park when they were very small. Kieran, he'd never been in a stadium before.
Oh, my.
So it was his first when he walked out with the team. I didn't even bring him out to see it before he walked out. So when he walked out with the team was the first real time to see it. So he, like, by the time he got back to me, he was actually shaking. He was so, he just couldn't believe it. The size of the place, the people, the crowd.
Stephanie, I was just going to say, for a little man like himself, the adrenaline and
He is soccer mad.
Ah.
He is absolute soccer mad. Yeah.
And Megan and the rest of the Irish women's team, they're so good at being considerate of the fans and supporting people like Kieran.
Yeah, oh, totally. Megan, in fairness, it was Christmas 22 and they were heading off to the World Cup. So it was, you know, but unfortunately Megan got an injury and she couldn't make it. But in fairness, like, she's been in contact with us so many times. And even after the other night, she was still messaging me. They're so good. They're so, so good. Like, you think people in their position kind of, but look, she's always messaging me, trying to catching up and seeing how Kieran is. Like, you know, they really are very special.
Yeah, and the very best of luck to them going forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of playing for Ireland and their own personal careers. Let's bring it back to the question of cystic fibrosis, because today is 65 Roses Day, and it's cystic fibrosis is actually, it's a chronic disease that I think Ireland has one of the highest incidents in the world and some of the most...
The highest, yeah.
Yeah.
We are the highest in the world, yeah.
Really remarkable. So I know that volunteers are outselling the Purple Roses in Westmeath and Laois and Offaly. And I know from talking to you that and your experience with CF, any support that goes in the direction of Cystic Fibrosis Ireland is well spent support in your perspective, I imagine.
Oh, massively. They're an amazing charity, I have to say. No matter what you need or do, you know, they're always there to help. They're even in Crumlin itself, there's four rooms in Crumlin that were funded basically by Cystic Fibrosis Ireland, because generally if you go into hospital with CF, you're in for a minimum of 4 days or 10 days, sorry. So you could be in for up to 14 or longer.
Right.
So it's very important, obviously, that you know, and they've great facilities up there, and a lot has been funded by cystic fibrosis. There's different things like exercise grants given out every year to, I suppose, people, because exercise and fitness is massively important for people with cystic fibrosis. You know, basically your lungs is the big problem, or one of the problems. So it's very, very important to be super fit. So there's exercise grants given out each year to help families to, you know, join clubs or buy equipment for the house and things like that.
Talk to me about that for a second, Stephanie. So my understanding, obviously, of CF is that, you know, you have diminished lung function when you have cystic fibrosis, but you're saying that it's really important to actually stay active and fit as much as is possible when that's the situation. But as you've been telling us, say in Kieran's case, getting out and being part of teams, that's not practical either. So how does a family balance all that out?
Just trampolines.
Ah.
Trampolines. So since, like, when Kieran was very, even before he was walking, his daily exercise used to be, I used to have to sit on, you know, the exercise balls, you know, the So you'd sit on that with him on your lap and you'd be bouncing on the ball. So because cystic fibrosis, the way it works is the mucus with children with cystic fibrosis, their mucus is very, very thick. So it's hard to move, and that's what happens. Because it doesn't move, the infection sits in the mucus and you get your infection. That's how you get, you know, they tend to get their infections. So it's very important you move that mucus all the time and keep it moving. So Kieran would be on a trampoline every day. Like, so when he moved on from the exercise ball, we would have had, you know, the little small trampolines you'd have
sure.
in your house.
Yeah.
He would have been on one of them every day, every night. And then obviously we've one in the garden that he'd be on quite regularly. But he also then works with it's called a pep mask. So it's like a little, it's a mask you wear every day. So he does breathing with that every day in the mornings for like, he does a certain set, you know, he does three sets of 12. And there's a little resistor on that mask that makes it hard.
Okay.
So he has to work harder to breathe. So it builds up the strength in his lungs. But exercise, anyone with cystic fibrosis would tell you exercise is massively important, obviously, because the more you're exercising, the more you're moving your lungs, the more you're moving that mucus and getting everything going.
Yeah.
But yeah, trampolines are big friends of people with CF.
Well, that's, I did not know that. And I'm kind of delighted to hear that at least there's some levity involved in the experience. Huge credit to Kieran for living through all of that and for coming out the other end of it. And to you, Stephanie, as well. 65roses.ie if you want to donate to support Cystic Fibrosis Ireland. If you can't pick up the purple roses at participating Dunn stores or shopping centres across the Midlands, you can also get Cystic Fibrosis Ireland on their website cfireland.ie, on Twitter and Instagram at @cf_Ireland, or on Facebook, and that is Cystic Fibrosis Ireland on Facebook. You will see a lot of their stuff under the hashtag 65roses Cystic Fibrosis Day. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us on the show. And
David, thanks so much for having me, and thanks for giving us the awareness that we badly need. Thank you very much.
Next, in the final part of our series on Camogie, we meet the first man elected Uachtaráin of the Camogie Association.
Health and fitness with the newly refurbished Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. Refresh your fitness journey with dedicated personal trainers on hand to help you achieve your goals. Find out more at MidlandsParkHotel.com.
Midlands 103.
I'm very glad to say I am joined by the first male president of the Camogie Association, recently ratified and ascended to the role, Brian Malloy. Brian, thanks very much for joining us. As I say that, I'm sure you're getting used to hearing it at this point, but from a personal perspective, it must be quite an experience over the last few weeks to be the president of the Camogie Association.
Hi, David. Yeah, it's a little bit surreal and unreal in many ways. It's funny, I'm usually a fairly confident speaker, but when I stood up to do my oraid on Uachtaráin Nua, the incoming president's speech, my first instinct with the nerves was to say, to greet Uachtaráin, and then I realised, no, actually I'm Uachtaráin, so I don't do that anymore. It's a fantastic honour from my perspective. It's not something that I set out to do, to be honest with you. I said this to someone else beforehand, there was never a Brian Malloy for President of the Camogie Association campaign in my head. I got involved in Camogie because my girls were playing Camogie, and the club, Ballanderreen in South Galway, where we were living, needed help. And I went in, and the chairperson of the club at that point in time was a well-known Galway hurler, Noel Lane, multiple All-Ireland winner, multiple All-Star winner on the hurling side. And I went in as his vice chair, worked with him for a few years, learned a lot from him, took over as chair, ended up then, I think, a lot of people would have similar experiences, particularly in rural Ireland clubs, where you go in to do one job and you end up doing loads of jobs. So I was collecting cones, and then I was doing a bit of coaching, then I was doing a bit of managing, and the whole way along.
As you touched on there, it sounds like it's not something that you had as a long-term objective or ambition to be president of the Camogie Association. And like so many parents, you become more and more involved with it over time. Why do you want to be president, though? Because obviously at some point you have gotten on this particular train and it has brought you all the way to the presidency. What motivates you about the role?
Well, I've two daughters, and my dad has passed away. I still have my mum and my wife. So I'm kind of surrounded by women. I've been involved in the Camogie Club, and I've seen the help that the Camogie Association needed and that I could do something. And it's not a big-headed piece, but I think volunteerism is such a core part of the Gaelic Games family across all the codes. And I felt I could add value, and I was adding value, and people were appreciative of the fact and asked me would I go to the next level. So I went from club, would I help out at county board level? At county board level, I was asked, would I help out at provincial level? Now, at that stage, I suppose I started thinking, you know, there's more that I can do here, and there's more impact that I can have, and there's more help that I can be across the association. And when you're a provincial chair, as I was in Connacht, you're automatically on the org corner. You're a vice president of the association. So the four provincial chairs are vice presidents of the association. And that gave me 3 years on Ord Cóirle, so the Supreme Council of the Camogie Association, similar kind of model to the GAA. And I felt I could bring something to the table. I could actually help affect the kind of change that's needed. Because at the end of the day, whilst things have significantly improved over the last number of years, really significantly improved, in terms of investment in women's sport, in terms of support for female participation in sport, we still have an awful long way to go to get to a truly equitable and equal situation for women participation in sport, for female participation in sport. And I'm passionate about that. I also just love Camogie. I loved when I was coaching and managing. I loved being involved with the teams. I loved being involved with the association. And it's a huge honour to be given the opportunity to be at the pinnacle of that association when it's a game that I love and a game my girls loved.
You mentioned that ladies' sport, women's sport, is still in a position of inequality in this country, and to be fair, probably across the Western Hemisphere of the world and beyond. Does it give you pause for thought? Do you feel an extra sense of responsibility to think that you are the first man to be the president of the Camogie Association? Is there any conflict in your own mind about doing such a thing at a time when people are looking to platform women in leadership roles where they have been deprived that opportunity? Or do you see it as a meritocracy situation and it's the best person for the job and it shouldn't affect your thinking?
Yeah, look, there's I have to say there's a bit of both to it. I think there's definitely value, significant value in having visible female leadership, because there is that whole that campaign that was run for some time about, you know, she has to see it to be it. And I think that is important. I think from a Camogie Association point of view, we can be comfortable that female leadership has been at the heart of our association, in that it's the first time that it isn't a female leader in 120 years. So I'm quite comfortable about the fact that there's nothing incongruous about me being the leader of the Camogie Association at this point in time. I'd love to see the day that we have a female leader of the Gaelic Athletic Association. So I think the meritocracy piece is there. You get the right person to do the job, and you get the person who's going to do the best for the members, for everybody, the volunteers all around the country. They need support from the central head office organization. And I believe, because of the fact that, although the one thing I've never done, obviously, is played Camogie, I have pretty much done every other job across the whole gamut within the Camogie Association that all our volunteers are doing at the moment. And as Uachtaráin, I have a full-time job, and I'm doing the Uachtaráin job as well. And people sometimes say to me, well, that's going to be difficult. And it is. But that's what we ask of our volunteers. That's what we ask of our adult players. So I think that from my point of view, I feel very comfortable that I have the knowledge, that I have the experience, and I have the capabilities to really leave something behind me and to really achieve something positive over the next 3 years of my term as the president of the association.
3 years, which is exactly what I'm going to pick you up on now. The Camogie Association's strategy for the next 3 years has been released. Talk us through what the key target areas are from the Camogie Association's perspective for the immediate future.
It's a big focus on participation, meaningful playing time. There was a report done on meaningful playing time, and it raised, and there's always different views as to why girls drop out of sport. And I know there's advertising running around the issue around stopping the drop and stopping girls dropping out from sport. But we know, and I would imagine if you asked volunteers around the country, they would, without having the research, give you a gut feeling answer. But we have the data, which indicates clearly that girls drop out of sport when they're left on the bench for considerable periods of time, when they don't get an opportunity to actually play. So we're introducing a number of different strategies over the next number of years to improve the opportunities for girls to actually get on the field and play. So not just going to training and then warming a bench for the duration of the match, for the duration of the season. We passed some very important motions over the course of Congress last weekend, which focused on increasing the number of substitutions that are permitted, up to and including unlimited substitutions on underage club games going forward. So that those kind of measures are part of a targeted strategy to expand the amount of time that our girls get to play, which will help us to attract more members and to retain the members that we have. There's other areas in terms of social camogie. So I'd be a big advocate of developing our competitions and our competition structures and making sure that we have very strong competition structures. But there's also a significant cohort who want to play camogie, and we need to give them the opportunity to play camogie just for the sheer enjoyment of it. Whether they're of competitive playing age but just aren't interested in the competitive side of it, or they have come out the other end of it. And there's a new membership category that we have added, which is a social adult playing category that has been added to our list of different membership categories. There's a big area around developing the social camogie side of our game. We're focused on increasing the number of people who come to our games. We're trying to make, we have a very, very strong product, and we have to ourselves, first of all, get better at supporting our own girls playing. Our attendance at matches isn't good enough, and people will possibly raise an eye at me being critical about it, but it just isn't good enough. We do need to get more people out attending matches around the country, and then getting to our big game, our big All-Ireland final game, our big league final game. So we have our league finals this weekend, and we're making a big push this weekend to get people to Croke Park to watch the Division 2A, the very Division 2A and very Division 1A finals, which are on this Sunday. And it's actually going to be truly historic, not just because it'll be the first time a male Uachtaráin has presented the 2A and 1A trophies, but because for the first time ever, we have a triple header event in Croke Park. One of the legs of that triple header, if that's not a mixed metaphor, is a Leinster Championship adult Gaelic football game.
And just to pick you up on that latter point, which from a Midlands perspective we're all very excited about, is Westmeath are competing in the 2A final against Derry. The forthcoming merging of the associations, this kind of initiative, I presume, kind of softens the ground for the general audience and the broader audience. So whatever immediate exposure benefits you get, there's also a potential payoff into the future that we all learn and understand that these codes can work together under one umbrella.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Westmeath, Derry, and we're encouraging the Westmeath and Derry football supporters to come in and support the Camogie girls as well. And they get the benefit of them being able to watch a what will be a thrilling encounter between Meath and Dublin in the football. We know that the Westmeath, Derry and the Galway Tip games are going to be brilliant games of camogie. Putting them on alongside a football game gives an indication, which we haven't always been good at in the past. We do the occasional double header, but it tends to be camogie and hurling only. But trying to get cross-code engagement and cross-code involvement between the football and hurling and camogie is not something we've been particularly good at. And I've been delighted that Jarlath Burns, the Uachtaráin, relatively recently appointed Uachtaráin of the GAA, is 100% behind it. And you'll have seen, whilst we're putting out our media messaging to get people to attend, so is the GAA. The GAA are very much behind the historic nature of this. This is going to be one of those events that people will look back afterwards and say, oh yeah, I was at that. It was the first time ever in Croke Park that we have camogie game followed by a men's football game. And I think it's a real opportunity for people to show that they support camogie and that they support Gaelic games in its entirety.
That's the mainstream platform, as it was, the national leagues and the championship action. But you mentioned social camogie, and just recently on our health and fitness show here on Midlands 103, I was speaking to members of Tullamore Camogie, two ladies who've gone through the Come On and Chat and Her With Me programmes, and they spoke to just how meaningful that social element is. Do you see it as an area of great growth for the sport across the region and across Ireland? It sounds like it's already making good progress on a parish-by-parish basis, let's say.
Yeah, it is. It is making great progress. And and I'm very impressed with what's happening in Tullamore. It's important we expand it. It tends to be somewhat in pockets where there is strong focus on the social camogie side of things and the come on and chats, and we need to just expand it, and we need to put some further resource into it, and that's one of the things that I will be looking to do. But it's really, really important. There's the social aspect of it in terms of getting people out in a fun environment. It's very good for you from a health perspective. There's a big focus on the sedentary lifestyle that everybody is unfortunately, or a large proportion of our population is unfortunately living at the moment. So any opportunity that we can get people to engage in a collective social environment, in a fitness-focused collective social environment, I think is really positive from a societal perspective. But from a camogie perspective, we're absolutely delighted with the development of the social camogie around the country. We just want to get more of it going. And one of the areas that I'm looking at as well is, and it comes from, I grew up quite a number of years ago in Dublin. I was working in the 80s and 90s, and there was a very strong business house league and Dublin Insurance Athletic Society and sports and social clubs. And the sports clubs tended to be the other sports. But back then, there was a fair amount of hurling and football played. And I want to get companies, intercompany competitions in camogie would be a great bit of social fun for people to compete against rival companies or compete against departments within their own company. We have to facilitate that and make it easy for that to happen. There's loads of complexities, there's loads of challenges, there's loads of reasons why it's difficult to do. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it.
20 years old and he has the continent at his feet. You'll meet Offaly's rising MMA star on Health and Fitness next.
Health and Fitness with the newly refurbished Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. Take the plunge in a new routine with our swimming pool, plunge pool, jacuzzi, sauna and steam room. For more, visit MidlandsParkHotel.com. Midlands
103. I'm joined in studio now by a European gold medalist in mixed martial arts. I'm very glad to welcome Jordan Scully, Tullamore man. And Jordan, big congrats. You've come back from Belgrade with a gold medal at the European Junior MMA competition there. Must be a great feeling to have won out in Belgrade.
No, look, David, I'd honestly say it was the best week of my life, and winning that final was the best day of my life. I came close so many times, just at previous IMAFs, just coming second, third, and then not medaling. But, you know, just the whole week, all the hard work leading up to it was totally worth it. And, you know, I feel on top of the world, but I'm still staying grounded. I'm back in training now. And, you know, I'm getting humble each and every day up in SPG Neis.
Talk to us about the competition itself. So it's an international representation competition. You're like fighting for Ireland, essentially, when you go over there. And then you're coming up against all different nations from around Europe. What are typically the nations there that are getting towards the latter stages of the competition?
Usually, now the highest nation would probably be Ukraine, and there's a few other ones I can't think. Maybe like Serbia, Bulgaria.
Okay.
But for the main one, I'd probably say it's Ukraine.
Ireland, I imagine, compete quite well at this level.
Oh yeah,
as well.
Ireland as well, obviously. Ireland are probably second behind Ukraine, but yeah, no, Ireland's definitely up there as like the top.
Okay, great stuff. So how many fights did you fight over in Belgrade?
I had three, but I was supposed to have four against the first lad I was supposed to fight was an Israeli fighter, but he ended up missing weight by 0.5. And as a result, I ended up getting a bye. So then I ended up having three fights in 3 days. The first one against Ukraine. And then I fought another Ukrainian again who was ranked number one in Ukraine. And he was a world silver medalist at previous IMAF. So high level competition. And then the last lad I fought was a German fighter. Originally, he's Albanian, but representing Germany.
Sure.
And he was a world bronze medalist and a national German champion. And I think he was ranked number one in Europe as well.
Okay, so you're fighting a world silver medalist and then a world medalist again and one of the top fighters in Europe. Because we're talking about mixed martial arts, there can be different strengths with different fighters. So were you coming across different types of fights throughout the 3 days?
Yeah, you have maybe Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys, wrestlers, strikers, but the lads I mainly fought were kind of, how would I say, the Ukrainian guy was a jiu-jitsu guy at first, the first guy I fought, and then the second lad, I'd say he was a well-rounded mixed martial artist in terms of, he had a bit of striking, he had a bit of grappling, and then as for the third lad I fought, he was a boxer with good wrestling and jiu-jitsu.
That's really interesting, isn't it, that, you know, nearly no other sport does that to you, where you're in competition if you're 3 days in a row, and sure, amateur boxers have that, but like they're just boxing every time, whereas you go from one fighter to the next not knowing if it's going to be on the ground, on the feet, wrestling or striking. Do you enjoy that kind of that style challenge to get your head around the opponent in front of you rather than their reputation or anything else?
Look, the way I see it is like, I try not to pay attention too much to my opponents. Obviously, I'll give them the respect they deserve. And with me, personally, I just want the toughest possible fights I can possibly get. Because at the end of the day, I know it's going to prepare me for pro. And as I say, you should be fighting the best lads possible at amateur. You shouldn't be taking the easy fights. You should be taking the hardest fights possible. And yeah, that's my opinion. It's just, it excites me to go up against good lads. And even there's going to be a bit of self-doubt there, you know, and a bit of nerves, but if you can persevere through that, you know, it'll be no bothers to you. And if you know that the lead up to training, that you did everything right, you should be more than comfortable with stepping in there with anyone. And that's all I have to say really on it.
You are now yourself a European gold medalist. You mentioned that you mentioned the three-letter word pro there a second ago.
Yeah.
That's the ambition, that's the goal and the expectation. Have you a time frame in mind for that?
If I was to guess, like, I'm only 20 years old, so, you know, I'm young, you know, and if I was to put a time frame on it, maybe 2 or 3 years, like, early as possible. But, you know, I don't mind going pro when I'm, like, 23, 24 as well. I have all the time in the world. I have time on my side. And,
that is very much the case. tell us then, you're 20, you're a European champion now, you're thinking pro in a couple of years. When did you start fighting? When did you start MMA?
I actually started when I was late 13, so maybe 2 months before I turned 14.
Okay. So despite your young age, you still have 6-7 years at the sport. So
nearly 7 years. Coming August, it'll be 7 years training.
Why did you get into it?
There's actually a lot of reasons. A lot of things in my personal life that was going on. I was bullied as well. I had no confidence as a kid. So my older brother, Kaelin Colgan, he actually suggested for me to go up to a MMA gym, and I was nervous at the start, you know, because you don't know what to expect. You think you're going to go into a gym, all these guys are going to try take your head off, but, you know. But I remember, like, the first day I walked in, and it was the best feeling in the world, and I just knew from that day forward that this was the sport for me. And despite all the hardship I went through in terms of, like, certain losses at previous Europeans, World Championships, I always knew I had the perseverance and the drive to keep going no matter how hard times got for me.
Talk to me about that kind of experience of walking into a gym, because our listeners can relate to this in some way, shape or form, because I've gone through it and everyone's gone through it. When you join a club or start a sport for the first time, there's anxiety when you're about to go in the door for the first time.
Of course.
You don't know if people are going to be looking at you like you've got 9 heads. What am I doing here? And then nearly more often than not, once you take the plunge and decide to step into that club or that space or that place or that gym in your instance, people are happy to welcome you.
Ah, of course. Like, it all depends. Like, your environment is very important as well. If you're welcomed into a gym and you feel like people are going to look out for you, help you reach, like, the best of your abilities, you're going to feel welcome. But if you walk into a place and, you know, people are going to ignore you, they're not going to be nice, you're not going to feel welcome and you're going to feel a bit of anxiety. But for me, I think the environment of a gym is so important as well, just to make a beginner feel welcome. Not even just a beginner, anyone, like, whether it be an experienced fighter, you know, a beginner, everyone should always feel welcome and get, like, all the help they can in the gym.
Do you think martial arts is particularly good at that element of that type of thing, being supportive and welcoming new people in?
Oh, of course. Like, martial arts is all about respect, hard work, honour and dignity. And yeah, that's all I really have to say on it. Like, those are the four important things about martial arts. And once you walk into a gym as well, like I assume most gyms, but 9 times out of 10, you're always going to feel welcome in a martial arts gym.
Great stuff. The lifestyle itself, like, you know, you're training full time. You're a fighter full time and a young man, and it brings with it requirements as well. So, you know, be it apart from actually getting to the gym and making sure you're doing the work in there, you have to watch how you live and all that type of thing. Do you enjoy that side of it? Talk us through what that looks like from your perspective.
Like, you know, it's a challenge, obviously. You have to get up super early every morning. Yeah, you have to eat right. You know, you have to sleep right. There's a lot that goes into being a full-time mixed martial artist and even a full-time boxer as well, for example. Like, and I'm sure there's a lot of boxers listening as well that can relate to this as well. You have to be consistent, and even the days you don't feel like getting up, you have to make yourself get up. And if you truly want it bad enough, you're going to make yourself get up no matter what.
And once you do get up, then that's the biggest challenge. Once you get going every day, every morning, I imagine once you're a few reps into the first session, you're very happy that you managed to get out there.
Oh, of course. Like, the hardest bit is getting up, but once you do get up, you're all good to go. And once you get that little bit of a sweat going, you know, you're ready for anything.
Right. As we finish up here, just talk us through what you've got coming up in terms of this week or the next couple of days. What does your kind of weekly training look like?
I train 6 times a week, 3 to 4 sessions a day. I commute up to Nace and back. I stay at my girlfriend's house up in Salins 2 times a week. And then I get a lift back to Tullamore 2 to 3 times a week off a guy, one of my good friends from Quebec, and Paddy McCormack. And on a Saturday, I'll travel up and train again, up and back for training. So that's what Jordan Scully's weekly training schedule is like.
And you started off in SBG Tullamore. You're now based in SBG and Nace Straight Blast Gym. So to a final point there, I imagine you're happy to give a shout out to the coaches in Nace and your training and sparring partners and all that. I imagine you guys become a tight enough unit over time.
Oh, of course, like, and ever since the move to Nace, I remember my first day, I was so nervous to go, and it felt like I was starting martial arts again. But in fairness to all the lads, they all made me feel welcome. They welcomed me with open arms. And look, a big special shout out. I have to give this guy a special shout out in particular, Conor McCarthy. He's an up-and-coming Irish pro mixed martial artist. But I can guarantee you this, he'll definitely be in the UFC in 2 to 3 years to come. And if it wasn't for that guy welcoming me the first day I went in there, I probably would have never joined there. So I can't thank him enough for welcoming me with open arms. And even all my coaches as well, Peter Queeley, Sergei Pekulski, Keane Conlon and Owen McDonald. So I'm just blessed to have such good people
some
in my
life. Serious pedigree there, isn't there? You mentioned your friend you gave a shout out there will be in the UFC in no time. What's the time frame for you being in the UFC?
If I was to put a time limit on it, I'd say 3 or 4 years.
Okay, we don't have to wait that long. That's good news. Jordan Scully, European champion, potential future UFC fighter. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you like hill walking or mountaineering, you're in for a treat with our next guest.
Health and fitness with the all-new Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. With fitness classes to suit everyone, experience the warmth at 30 degrees in our dedicated spin studio. Discover all this and more on MidlandsParkHotel.com. Midlands
103. Now, I think we can all relate to the idea of having a setback or being restricted, injured, unwell, and feeling like you're not going to be able to get back to your best former self. Sometimes that experience can be really discouraging. On other occasions, it can be motivating. Fergal Hingerty has been through quite a bit in terms of personal injury, but has come back to really set records straight across Ireland and Europe. He's broken another record recently after climbing over in Wales. He's become the first person to climb all the hills and mountains in both Wales and Ireland. And he joins us on Health and Fitness this evening. Fergal, you're very welcome to the show. When you were going through what was chronic back pain just over 10 years ago, did you ever imagine that you'd have such a back catalogue of incredible achievements since?
my ambition was to walk to the shop, quite simply, because my back pain was so bad. So I was introduced to the sport of hill walking by somebody from Tullamore, actually. And I liked it. I started to do smaller lifts. And before long, opportunities and the situation arose that there was a possibility of getting a first or to break a record. And I followed that, you know.
Talk to us about the most recent climb. And did you know that once this had been done that you would be top of this particular list to be the first person who's done all the hills and mountains in both Wales and Ireland?
Well, I did all the hills and mountains in both Wales and Ireland, but just to clarify a very minor point, there is one small hill off an island off Wales that I haven't done, so it's mainland Ireland and mainland Wales.
Okay.
There's still a couple of minor hills I have to do, which of course I will achieve at some stage. regarding... I had no idea when I lived in England for 3 years. So I climbed some of the hills in Wales and I started off with a county top list. Yeah. And then gradually as time moved on and I was climbing more in Wales and with different people there, it then became achievable. And then it was a goal. And it helps you when you're going through wind, rain, snow and cold days to know, well, you're doing this for a purpose or a reason, you know.
You must have a really high degree of mental strength, because as you've said there, and when I speak to those involved in, be it hill walking, hiking, mountain climbing, there's a certain psychological challenge in the distance involved, how long you might be out on a walk or a climb. That must have built up a strong mental resolve in you. Do you think that mental resolve was made stronger by, I suppose, coming back from the injury that you had, as you said, from going to wanting to walk to the shops to what you've achieved now is a remarkable distance to travel?
Well, I used to play football and Gaelic football before I got injured. So I was used to the mental discipline of training, for want of a better word. So not being able to do something for 10 years, and when you're given the chance again, a second chance, you're going to take it with both hands. Regarding the mental strength of climbing mountains, it's easy to do a big circuit in a group or to do a big circuit in one fell swoop. But the mental discipline of hill bagging, as they call it, which is quite a huge sport and growing all the time in both Ireland and England and in the continent, is quite different, because you might have a situation where you might have to do 8 different climbs in a day. So you drive to a hill, climb it, go back to the car, drive to the next one and start all over again. So mental strength would be an important part of it, yes.
That's remarkable. So hill bagging, if you're looking to collect vast swathes of climbed mountains and hills, you would do multiple in a day. And this is something that's growing around Western Europe or in England and Ireland.
Well, it's a worldwide phenomenon. I know from climbing the hills in Poland, recently I became the first Irish person to climb the KGP, which is the Krona Gora Polski, and it's not such a big thing in the Ireland and England hill walking, a bit more in England than it is here, but certainly in the likes of Poland, where you see whole families going walking every weekend, yes, it is. I suspect as well it also would be, you're getting away from your tower blocks to get out into the fresh air would be a large part of it, you know.
Okay, it's an amazing story you have, and like as you mentioned there with the peak in Poland and a few more, like you've climbed many or nearly, by the looks of it, a big number of Europe's highest mountains across the continent.
Yeah, I have 20, I think it's 21 of the European crown, and I hope to get another 5 or 6 this summer. I'm not too sure if the list is totally achievable, because some of it is very technical. I've done some technical stuff, but my abilities only go so far, unfortunately, you know.
Bring me back to the starting point here. It was chronic sciatica that you were suffering from, is that right?
Yes, it was chronic sciatica. I had 15 MRI scans over a period of 9 years. The surgeons didn't want to go near me because they're afraid to go near the back in case they get sued. Eventually, I had an operation to cut one disc in Sweden after an argument with the insurance company. That didn't work. which didn't leave me hugely happy, to put it mildly. But fortunately, there was a surgeon in Ireland who was prepared to do it. And the operation had a 20% chance of putting me in a wheelchair. I was 100% heading for a wheelchair. Otherwise, my standing time, for instance, which was at 5 minutes, had reduced down to 2 minutes without being in pain. So it was a very much touch and go situation, you know.
So how is it that you came out of that?
Well, there's three aspects to it, really, as far as I'm concerned. Firstly, I cannot give Ashley Poynton enough praise. His skill in doing a very complex operation, which lasted 9 hours and 47 minutes. I had 5 discs cut and the spine shaved. Most people would have 1 disc cut. Once I finished the operation, I had to do extensive physio and extensive exercises. I was given 522 stretches a day for 3 months. Now, I missed two of them because I got a phone call and I forgot to do the two. But I think missing two out of 522 that's a day incredible. Over 3 months isn't too bad.
No, that's unreal. So, by the sounds of it, it's a life-forming experience, obviously, and you've gone and done so much. Just to go back to the most recent expedition in Snowdon, I think a lot of people in Ireland are familiar with some of our climbing ranges, the Schlieffblums in the Midlands, Glen de Loch in Wicklow, the McGillicuddy Reeks, it's down south. But Snowdon in Wales, if there's any passionate climbers, from what I've heard and read, Snowdon in Wales is an absolute must, and it's one of those that's so close to us.
Yeah, the only problem with Snowdon is that there's around 700,000 people visit a year, which is a staggering figure.
Wow.
I was climbing mountains in or around it when I decided to climb Snowdon itself. I've climbed it 3 times, I think, from different directions to take in different peaks. I did it in February in a day that it was wet and cold and miserable, and there were still 200 people at the top when I got there. So you have to pick and choose your time of doing it carefully. And the strange thing is, very much like here, I would regard that as what I would call a tourist mountain, like Carn Tuathail would be, and so on. But if you went up Carn Tuathail and you look at the mountains to the left or the right of it, there's hardly anybody on it. And similarly with Snowdon, I've climbed the peaks around it, and you'd be lucky to meet two or three people. Yet you know that on Snowdon, that particular day, there'd be thousands of people climbing it just to say they've been on the highest. So very often, it's not necessarily the mountain in front of you that's worth climbing. It's the ones off it. And sometimes the views are better.
Well, that is a handy tip, probably well worth people listening, taking on board. A final question then, Fergal, is as you crest these peaks and you experience climbing, what are the positive thoughts and things that occur to you when you're climbing? What are the aspects of climbing that you enjoy?
The people that you climb with. And it opens doors in terms of, I know people from all over Europe now. I have invites from all over Europe to go climbing and further afield. So it's a camaraderie to a certain extent, a shared suffering in the cold and the wind and the rain. So, some of the best fun I've had is sitting down to have a cup of tea when the wind is howling around you and the rain is pouring upon you. Just something warm. The sense of achievement, obviously. The actual skill involved, whereby using a map and compass to get up a hill in the fog and the rain to follow the landmarks, for want of a better word, or the handrails, as they call it, you know, you follow the side of a wood or a river or whatever. And then also the winter views. Some of the views you get up high are not anything you would see down below. It is quite fantastic. You also would get a certain aspect of how small we are in the scheme of things, you know.
That's Health and Fitness for another week. I'll be back with you next week. The esteemed Joe Cooney is next with Country Roads. Talk to you soon.